Everyone, this is the Thursday, April 6th meeting of the Metro Council, and we have two councilors who are away on business. Council President Tom Hughes and Councilor Craig Dirksen are doing Metro Council business in Washington, D.C. We're very happy they're doing that. So I just want to note that we do have a quorum here today with all who are present. We're going to start with council communication, and we have two folks who have submitted blue cards. If there's anyone else who would like to comment, please submit a card over to Ms. Papstorf. But I'd first like to call up Marta Michalow. Forward, please. Sitting in front of the mic would be great, and Nellie will make sure that the mic is turned on for you.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity to chat with you. I am from Gillam County, from Arlington, and I drove down this morning so I could talk to you for a few minutes. And really what I wanted to talk to you about is the importance of the Portland garbage to our community and our county. We are a really small county, as you know. We are the third smallest in population in the state. There's between, I don't know, I'm going to say 1,300 to 1,500 people in the entire county. We are bigger than Sherman County, yes. Yes, and Wheeler County. But all three of us are right there together. But we are bigger than them, and we're more important, too, by the way. Don't tell them I said that. And I am the Arlington Community Chamber of Commerce president, also a small business owner. My husband and I own Arlington Hardware, and I'm also the postmaster. And if that gives you any idea of how we all kind of roll in our community, we all do a lot of things. Also on the Gillam County Planning Commission, so I'm really familiar with waste management. I drive by waste management twice a day, coming into town and going out of town, and deal with lots of trucks and lots of railroad cars. And it's every time I do, I think about all the people that work there, my friends, my neighbors, my family. My husband started there in 1989. He was the first crew. And he was a truck driver. He hauled garbage between Portland and Arlington. And so it's near and dear to all of us. Somewhere around 150 people are employed by waste management in between chemical waste management and waste management, which is the garbage side, the chem side. And, you know, we see those trains go through town twice a day, and we just think about what would happen if we didn't have them. And it's really important to us. Our community is small. We do have other things. We have wind, but those are on private property. I'm sorry?
Wind, wheat, and waste.
That's it. Wind, wheat, and waste. That sounds like Dennis Gronquist. I'm sure you probably know Dennis, who recently passed away. We lost him. And he was our county commissioner for many years. And he was really a terrific man, and we miss him very much in our community. And he was involved with the trucking side of the garbage. So, you know, I don't want to take up a lot of your time. I just want to say how much it has meant to us. I know it started in 1980.
It's okay. You can just finish up. That's
okay.
All right.
So, in 1989, my parents were not advocates, as a lot of farmers weren't. They had a farm there. They weren't on board, and it took about 5 or 6 years, and people turned around. They saw the difference that it made to our community, and it made a huge difference. I lived down here at the time. I grew up there. Left home, moved back, but I lived in the Portland area when the site first went in out there. And so all I heard about was from my mom. I was like, oh, man, oh, what are we going to do? But once I witnessed it, it was like, wow, this is great. and so important. And one more time, thank you for the opportunity to chat with you. Thank you for the opportunity of hosting your garbage. It's done phenomenal things for us. And Waste Management's been a great partner to our community as well. They're very environmentally minded, if that's possible, with garbage, and it totally is. They do methane gas. They do all sorts of stuff. And they've been a good partner to us. So, again, thank you. I won't take any more of your time. I appreciate you listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you, and drive safely home.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. I'm going to go shopping now. I'm in Portland.
Get a tube for that.
And the sun's going to come out, too. So.
I brought that with me.
And we do have another member of our community to talk with us today. That's Art Llewellyn. Mr. Llewellyn, would you like to come up?
I'm a bit of a social misfit. Designing transit systems for Portland, and they know me here at Metro as using it another resource, Metro as a resource to submit designs to, and believing that they considered seriously. I'm a pretty good engineer designer. I'm sure that my work's gotten looked at good. I have another to submit. It's an older one, west side of the Markham Bridge. And currently we're considering a tunnel idea, and if I submit these drawings to you, you can picture how formidable, never mind sensible, that would be. So you've got some drawing maps that can there's a new drawing on the back of a surface street, Old Town. I came in again because there were some things I wanted to say last week, and I was a little thrown off by the tempo, and I didn't get to them. And I could have said I don't go before council as an opponent, and I try to balance between left and right and this project and that project. It's where we can find good compromise. I would have tried to do that. I always try to do that. But I'm still dealing with the idea of how we design a subway for Portland, and therefore it's a contentious issue. And I'm leaning on the side of geologic stability and seismic considerations. I think my route would last better than the type that is proposed by Aorta. The deep bore tunnel underneath buildings is a soil questionable part. It's certain to me that it's not right to do that. I think that the design I've got from the waterfront is possible, and it keeps us those soils where the most liquefaction they'll roll, whatever they hit. So you wall them off. I have to take this, ask again for a review so that we can do the right thing for our expansion. Aorta agrees with me on connecting the Green Line to Milwaukee. Running, they do like that idea and getting to Mount Hood Community College. That's a little while back at the Vision Zero evening. I really hoped that we could, get into that someday. Thanks for letting me go before you all these years. And if you really want me to explain, you're going to have to set up a review. Thank you.
Thank you, Art.
Thanks, Art.
And that's all we have for citizen communications today, so we'll move on to our consent agenda. And today's consent agenda consists of four items: the consideration of the minutes for March 23rd, 2017, Resolution 17-4774, Resolution 17-473, and Resolution 17-4784. Do I have a motion?
Approval of the consent agenda.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. The consent agenda is adopted. So, for clarity in today's meeting, I'd like to change the order of some of our agenda items so there's a better flow. I understand that the ordinance 17-1398 and resolution 17-4779 are related to one another. And so for that purpose, we're going to move on the ordinance first and then go into the resolutions from there. So first, on ordinance 17-1398, Ms. Papstorf, could you read that by title only?
Ordinance number 17-1398, for the purpose of amending Metro Code Section 2.04 and declaring an emergency.
Thank you. I'd like to call on Ms. Carrie Stacy, Gabby Schuster, and Ashley McCarran, please, for a brief presentation.
Thank you, Deputy Council President Harrington and Metro Councilors. I'm pleased to request of Metro Council and our local contract review board to consider this ordinance and resolution to amend our Metro Code to adopt agency-wide contracting and procurement administrative rules. The legislation you're considering today is part of a package, and the related nature of the ordinance and resolution lead us to address them as follows. We'll speak to the resolution first and then the ordinance, then a public hearing for the ordinance should follow. And then you would vote on first the ordinance as council and then on the resolution as the local contract review board. For a bit of overview, the state of Oregon requires that a public body either follow the state's administrative model rules for public contracts or adopt its own rules of procedure. Metro staff has opted out of using the model rules and created administrative rules by taking our current contracting and procurement policies and code, and general contracting and procurement practices that were not fully adopted. To adopt these administrative rules, we must use an ordinance to amend code as a vehicle to implement the rules through resolution. Now, you've all been individually briefed on the nature of the administrative rules, and my role today is as the project manager. I helped to develop these rules by providing project management support from the COO office to allow both the Office of Metro Attorney staff and procurement services staff from Finance and Regulatory Services to fully participate in developing rules that would improve Metro's ability to conduct business. And I'm confident that these rules are a good product because that product was the result of a thoughtful process. We had a project team which included representatives from six different departments and venues, committed to working collaboratively using a comprehensive approach, balancing legal and obligatory requirements with business needs, and upholding the Metro values of teamwork, excellence, public service, and respect. We also engaged with more than 100 staff stakeholders to ensure we addressed business needs from all parts of the agency. Often, the process is just as much part of the product, and I think that's true in this case. In our reviews of these rules with Metro staff, they've been pleased with the changes that ensure consistency, flexibility, accountability, and simplicity in contracting and procurement. These administrative rules largely keep policies that currently meet Metro's business needs and capture those in a clearly written format. But we also made policy changes designed to meet different contracting and procurement needs of departments and venues, and those are summarized in your staff report to the resolution. In addition, the rules uphold a commitment to equity in contracting, and I'd like to ask Gabby Schuster to speak to those.
Good afternoon, Metro Councillors. Metro, over the years, has made a strong commitment to equity. And as Metro, we demonstrate that in many ways, such as the great work that our Diversity and Equity Inclusion team has done. In developing the rules, the project team and procurement services also have shown their commitment to equity. This was a complex and collaborative process that required us to do some extensive research. We looked at a number of local and also regional equity contracting programs and researched as far as away as the city of Seattle even. There were many people involved in developing the program, and I want to first start with thanking my procurement services team, and I think some of them are here today, and I would like to actually call out their names and ask them to stand up, because they always work behind the scenes and, you know, have provided their expertise and years of experience in working in procurement and also in doing the outreach work, and they have been doing this work much longer than myself. So I would like to recognize them today. Two of my staff members are actually doing outreach work today. Riku Tannenbaum and Tracy Segal are not here, but I believe who are in the room are Karen Slosarenko, Julie Hoffman, John DeVoe, and Kim Bardis. Yay! they have provided their wisdom and experience to me and keep me sane all the time. We also want to thank the small business chambers, business communities, and many individual small business owners who provide their input on creating these rules. Their input was really important to us to get their perspective and experience in working with government and also with Metro. And this will help historically underutilized firms succeed in working with Metro. Their input was really important to us. And to just mention a few key people here, Tony Jones from the Metropolitan Contractor Improvement Partnership, also Andrew Collis, Nate McCoy, Alondo Simpson, and Jeff Moreland from the National Association of Minority Contractors Oregon. It's an organization that we network with. They have their meetings in this very room every other month. Suzanne Donaldson from Donaldson Enterprises, representing the Native American communities. And then also members of the Business Diversity Institute. And this is just to name a few, because there were many more small business owners who assisted us in developing the equity contracting rules. And we also want to thank our public agency partners. We picked their brains on their equity contracting programs. And those were Brian Smith and Lee Fleming from Multnomah County, also Christine Moody and Tiffany Penson from the City of Portland, and Kimberly Mitchell Phillips from the Port of Portland. They were the key people that we talked to, but again, there were many others from other jurisdictions who provided their input. And then further in developing the equity rules, we focused on keeping the equity activities that are already working, things that we have already done for years, but we wrote them finally into the new rules. And these new rules add more flexibility and opportunities for contractors as well as for our own staff. For example, there are new components such as a direct $50,000 award for personal services agreements as long as it's awarded to a COBIT firm, standing for Certification Office of Business Inclusion and Diversity, formerly known as MWESB. And another new component is a solicitation and equity strategy meeting that procurement services and the contracting department will engage with to explore contracting opportunities for COBIT firms. These are very valuable discussions that can lead to wonderful economic opportunities for small firms. We also added the fourth certification type as directed by the state of Oregon, service-disabled veterans. So now we have minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, emerging small businesses, and SDV, service-disabled veteran. And we also strengthened our subcontractor opportunities and requirement for prime contractors to make in contact with a COBIT firm and following up, making sure that the small firm really has an opportunity in subcontracting on a large project for Metro. There are further details in your staff report that would take too much time to mention here, but there are a lot of little details in the equity contracting program, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak, and I'm going to hand it back over to Carrie.
So for these rules to go into effect, we must update Metro Code to remove contracting and procurement policies and refer to the administrative rules. And I would like Ashley McCarron to speak to that ordinance.
Good afternoon, councilors. I don't have much to add to what Carrie already summarized, but to sort of restate it again, what we're doing is before we can adopt the rules, we need to amend 2.04 in order to remove what is existing there, which is some of our contracting policies and procedures. So we're doing that first, and then we'll ask you to adopt the rules after that. You'll see if you look at the red line in your packet, most of it is deletions, and that's because those concepts are being removed to be inserted into the rules that you'll be adopting later today. Thank you.
So I would also like to thank a few people, Ashley McCarron for doing yeoman's work in developing 200 pages of rules and researching how other agencies do contracting and procurement and helping to tee up the conversation for a project team. I'd like to thank Gabi for her guidance on how we conduct procurement now. She can weigh in on what has worked and what could work better, and we definitely incorporated that in our work. And then Tracy Segal, as a trainer in procurement services, she understands the end user and how they need to clearly understand the rules and be able to make them work. The members of our project team committed many hours of thoughtful and hard work, including Jill Morton from the Office of Metro Attorney, Craig Stroud, Heidi Ron, and Jim Mitchell from the Oregon Zoo, Chris Wu from our Construction Project Management Office and Property and Environmental Services, Jason Blackwell from Portland 5, who is now in San Francisco, sadly, Elizabeth Getzinger from Communications, Shannon Leary from Parks and Nature, Saren Bussell from Property and Environmental Services, and Diane Hutchins from Planning and Development. And I'd also like to thank our steering committee members for their guidance, which included Allison Keene, Tim Collier, and Scott Robinson. Once these rules are adopted as interim rules, Procurement Services is poised to train more than 350 staff who will earn a Procurement Fundamentals card, which you have before you. And as part of communicating about those rules, we invite you to attend a procurement fair on May 3rd and get your passport to procurement stamped. A comment period will begin after your vote, which will extend through May 31st, and we will launch external communications about that as soon as is appropriate, and we would return on June 15th for adoption of the final rules. And that concludes our presentation.
Great. Before we go any further, do you have any questions for staff right now? Okay, but don't worry, they're not going away. So after a public hearing, if we have any other questions, we'll be able to ask that. So now I will gavel into a public hearing. Does anyone wish to speak to us about the ordinance? Because I don't have any blue cards. Nope. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll gavel out of the public hearing. Do we have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Wonderful. We have a motion and a second. Given that, any questions? Ah, there we go.
Sorry, talking to myself.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you were going to call on me.
Councillor Collette.
Thank you. I'm very excited to support this, all of this hard work, and I'm especially grateful that you got all the staff working together on it. This is, I think, pretty transformative. It's the kind of thing we have all wanted to see happening, and it was one of those things where we just sort of said, make it happen, and I don't think anybody up here knew really what that meant, what it was going to take on your part. So I know it was a ton of work. I'm just really appreciative of how hard and how sincerely you all put yourself to getting this thing done and getting it done right. So thank you. It's great. And I got my passport.
Yeah. You haven't earned it yet.
I know, but I've got it now.
Anyone else? Yes, Councillor Craig.
Well, I just want to add to Councillor Collette's comments. You know, as the amount of time and detail that you went to, I'm sure we have no knowledge of how much this really took, but what impact this has on the region and our ability to reach out to people of all color. And so I just want to say thank you. I know this is, it looks simple at this moment in time, or, you know, just a few words that we say, but I recognize you've put a lot of time, effort, a lot of people have been working on this. You reached out to a lot of people in the region, and then the benefit we're going to receive from this. So thank you so much. And I'm sure as time over time, I probably will be, as I learn more about this, really be able to truly recognize all the work that you've put into this. And so thank you very much for all that you've done.
Councilor Chase?
Thank you. I just think this is a really good example of good governing and good government and the work that you did up front to really help us all do our jobs much better. And starting with the best practice research and really understanding and doing the due diligence to learn from others, I think is such an important component. I think you've created a lot of flexibility for us to be much more efficient. And to really, I think, but still remaining very accountable and having the oversight as we do our work. And I think, to me, very important is just the ability to address equity in an even more meaningful way and providing that opportunity. So I just want to add to the thanks.
And if I may, I wouldn't want my lack of original thought to prevent me from joining in expressions of gratitude like those that my colleagues have made. I know there was a great deal of work that went into this. I know it was motivated by a core objective of everything we do here at Metro, which is equity. And it also serves the purpose of reducing all kinds of potential conflicts and confusions in the existing language. I want to thank you as well.
Well, I'm going to join in the fun as well. And while looking at the agenda, it may sound like a very dry accomplishment. I mean, rules, right? I mean, how can I be excited about rules? But it's because this is where we take our policies and we really put them into action. We have a really valuable strategy to advance racial equity throughout our region. And this is one of the ways where we make that happen. We take our policies and we put them into action through our investments, taking taxpayer dollars that we want and need to use to implement various projects and programs, and we're able to not only use local companies, but we're able to accomplish the project results through companies where we're also contributing to community good and social advancement. And that, to me, is one of the reasons why this is so exciting. Councillor Chase put it well, that this is also about good government and advances that, particularly as it increases transparency for our external stakeholders and decision-making for our staff. Our staff works really hard for the public. This will help them do that work a little bit more efficiently. That's wonderful. But it will also streamline things as well, not only for Metro staff, but also for our external partners. So there is a lot here to love. I appreciate all of the detailed work that staff has gone through and engaging folks throughout our community to make this happen. And it's because of your engagement that we don't have people coming forward to participate in the public hearing because you've done such a good job. So I join my colleagues and thank you very much. And I think we're all going to look forward to voting on these two measures. So thank you. So with that, Ms. Papsdorf, could we please call a roll on the ordinance?
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Deputy Council President Harrington.
Yes, thank you. And now we will move on to the resolution part of this, and our staff's going to stay there with us. We will temporarily recess the meeting of the Metro Council and convene the Metro Contract Review Board. Ms. Papsdorf, whoops, I need to run this machine properly. Could you read the resolution 17-4779 by title only, please?
Resolution number 17-4779, for the purpose of adopting local contract review board administrative rules and interim equity and contracting administrative rules.
Thank you. I'd like to call for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. And with that, we have our staff here. Do you have anything more that you would like to present on the resolution?
No.
Okay. Councillors, do you have any other questions or comments? I know I have nothing more to contribute. So with that, Ms. Papstorf, could we have a roll call, please?
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Deputy Council President Harrington?
Yes. And with that, just with the previous resolution, the ordinance passed 5-0 and the resolution has passed 5-0. And my screen is still up. There we go. And now we're going to move on to the second resolution, Resolution 17-4781. Ms. Papstorf, could you read the resolution by title only, please?
Resolution number 17-4781, for the purpose of authorizing an exemption from competitive bidding and direct award of the construction contract for the new primate habitat project at the Oregon Zoo by amendment to the CMGC contract for the construction of the new polar bear habitat and associated infrastructure.
Wow, I think that takes one of the contests for a long resolution title. We have our panel of Metro staff experts with us, Ms. Gabby Schuster, Ms. Heidi Ron, and Mr. Jim Mitchell. Please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Deputy Council President Harrington and fellow Metro councillors. I'm Heidi Ron, the director of the Zoo Bond Program. I know you've seen me a lot lately as we try to figure out ways to efficiently and effectively wrap up the final projects with the Zoo Bond, and we appreciate your thoughtful analysis and approval of our budgets and our project scopes. As we discussed at a previous work session, we're here today to recommend that the remaining three Zoo Bond projects be constructed under the oversight of one general contractor. I'm going to provide an overview of the situation and the constructability benefits for the zoo, while Gabby Schuster, Metro's procurement manager, will make a formal recommendation regarding the procurement of construction services on these projects. Jim Mitchell is our construction manager for the Zoo Bond projects, and he's joining us to help address any questions or concerns you may have. So, as you recall, we're more than halfway through a major renovation of the zoo, funded by a public bond passed in 2008. We are remodeling nearly 40% of the zoo campus, and we've completed 5 of our 8 bond-funded projects. Recently, we opened in the Education Center, and just last week, we had amazing success with our spring break camps in this new space, and very much looking forward to our summer camps. All of our projects have been completed on time and on budget and have met the promises made in the ballot measure to protect animal health and safety, improve zoo campus sustainability, and expand opportunities for conservation education. You recently approved budget and scope amendments for the remaining 3 projects, a new polar bear habitat, a renovation of the primate habitat, and a modification to the current hippo habitat in order to expand the space available for our rhinos. Our goal is to complete the final bond-funded projects on time, on budget, and to deliver high-quality habitats for the animals and educational experiences for our guests. As you know, we've tried to do one project at a time to minimize the impact on the zoo campus, and each of those projects has been separately managed by various general contractors throughout the region. As we looked at cost savings opportunities for the remaining projects, we identified the opportunity to compress the schedule and manage construction of these projects with one CMGC, or Construction Management by General Contractor, contract. We believe this aligns with what the agency's procurement goals to meet our business needs, provide flexibility, and commit to equity in contracting. I know that this is a complicated map to read from where you are, but this is a zoo campus map. It highlights the location of Polar Passage, primates, and rhinos. So the colored blocks on this map is the area of impact that we will be having on the zoo during the construction of these projects. As you can see there in the center of the zoo, they're going to cause significant disruption to zoo operations and our guest experience while we're under construction. Zoo Street is the path, the hatched path on the right through the center of the projects there, runs right through these two projects, and it's definitely going to impact the flow of visitors. So we would like to propose that managing the construction of these projects with one CMGC contract will create efficiencies, will reduce the total construction schedule from 30 months to 22 months. The shorter length of the combined projects will reduce the duration of the impacts on zoo revenues resulting from construction impacts on the guest experience and the temporary loss of revenue-generating visitor amenities. The CMGC firm for Polar Passage is already on board, working diligently to assist us in reducing our estimated cost of construction and the impact to zoo operations. To date, the CMGC firm has assisted us in reducing our project cost estimate by more than $6 million. The high degree of complexity of interface of the project improvements for these remaining projects and the need to integrate them with each other, as well as all of the infrastructure upgrades that happen with those projects call for integrating their design and construction under one design firm and one CMGC firm. Managing the construction of the remaining projects with one CMGC contract will reduce our total construction schedule by 8 months, resulting in a minimum estimated savings of $1.3 million. Coordinating the mobilization and staging of construction equipment on site, construction phasing, and project management will lower the impact on zoo operations and the guest experience. Cost savings that we realize from the construction coordination of the three remaining projects will help us support animal welfare, conservation education, and sustainable infrastructure. The Zubon Citizens Oversight Committee recommends combining the projects under one CMGC contract to realize these cost and time savings. I'm going to turn it over to Gabi to provide the formal recommendation from the procurement team.
Good afternoon again, Metro Councillors. From a perspective of being good stewards of public dollars, Procurement Services recommends that one contractor oversee the construction of the remaining three Zubon projects. This requires a modification to the CMGC contract for the polar bear habitat project. Any subcontracted work will require competitive bidding through our prime contractor with a focus of COBIT firms, again formerly known as MWESB. The polar bear habitat RFP was formally advertised and posted on ORPIN, the Oregon Procurement Information Network. Lee Scrutcher Lewis was selected prime contractor based on robust selection criteria, including a workforce diversity plan and aspirational contracting goals for COBIT firms. Combining the three projects is unlikely to encourage favoritism or substantially diminish competition. We acknowledge here the advantages that exist as a result of the construction environment at the zoo, project timing, proximity, and the current construction market. Due to the proximity of the primate exhibit to the polar bear exhibit and the overlapping project schedules, Lee Scrutcher Lewis already has significant knowledge of the construction needs for the primate habitat project. If a solicitation process were to be conducted, Lee Scrutcher Lewis would have information that places them ahead of other firms. In addition, any competitor for the primate project would have to coordinate work around the adjacent polar bear habitat, while Lee Scrutcher Lewis would be able to combine the project working space and management of personnel, which saves Metro a lot of money. We can go to the next slide. We herewith are asking the Council to approve a new exemption from competitive bidding, authorizing Metro to contract directly with Lee Scrutcher Lewis for the simultaneous construction of the primate habitat and the polar habitat projects by amendment to the polar bear habitat CMGC contract. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So for Councillor questions, Councillor Chase.
Well, thank you. I'm a fan of the CMGC for these kinds of projects because they're so complicated, and that's the kind of approach that I think is really innovative and needed, and it also allows us to address those really important equity goals and strategies, COBIT firms that we want to do, and which is equally challenging because of the complexity of the types of projects that we're doing. But I, am a fan and really appreciate you bringing also these three together and consolidating, and the cost savings looks great. I guess my question is, what was the original thinking around having them separated, there's so many upsides I see here. What are some potential, are there potential things to look out for, pitfalls to look out for by using this strategy that you could share?
We actually had that conversation at quite at length, and we felt there were so many more pitfalls by not using this strategy that that was the recommendation from a cost savings and a time savings perspective. If we didn't go this route, we would not conduct these projects simultaneously due to the impact of construction on the zoo campus. And that would delay the completion date of the final project and thus extend our program cost and our staffing costs as well as our management costs for a general contract firm. The only downfall we could see is the perceived lack of competition in this new exemption from competitive bidding, which is why we are bringing this to you and having a public hearing today.
And of course, the CMGC allows for that competition internally, and that the cost savings is in there. So,
yes, absolutely. And I think it's really important to call out that all of the work will be subcontracted, and that will require a competitive bid by a minimum of 3 bids on each scope of work. So we hope to see many subcontractors out there working on this project.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. So you talked about how the contractor is currently working on savings, and you said something like $6 million mm-hmm. in savings. And now then there's an additional $1.3 million that could be saved. Is that what you're saying? Or $1.3 million? I'm not sure where that $1.3 million savings comes from. Is it because we've merged the two projects?
Yes, correct. So the merger of the projects results in us having to pay less for the general conditions and the fees that we pay for the general contractor to manage the projects, as well as creates efficiencies in the subcontracted work. So now we have subs that can bid on two projects and hopefully have efficiencies on site. Would you like to expand on that, Jim?
Good afternoon, councilors. So as Heidi was saying, what happens is for subcontractors, so we have one mobilization cost, we have one job trailer, we have, you know, throughout the duration of this project. And really the biggest savings are in the compressed time frame. So, you know, we're looking at each project being 15 months, total of 30. Here, by combining, we're down to 22 months. And that's huge, you know, because all of the subcontractors, the larger ones, I should say, have project managers on site, have, you know, PMs. So we're reducing all that time.
I might follow up. I guess I'm wondering is if we've cut the projects by $6 million or the design by $6 million, and we're saving $1.3 million here, is that $1.3 million that we want to put back into the design of things that we maybe cut that were a little too close to the bone? Or you're saying here that it'll go towards animal welfare, education, and sustainability, but I'm sure you've thought this through, so I'm just wondering, is there something we cut that we'd rather have with that $1.3 million?
So as you recall, at one of our previous conversations, we talked about the significant cost escalation in the region.
Right.
And the budget amendment for the Polar Passage project did not cover the full cost escalation that we're seeing in the region. So by reducing our fees to the general contractor and the cost that we'll be paying for overhead, we'll be able to redirect that into the project, in the project design, to cover some of the escalation costs for the animal welfare and the sustainability components. So it will be redirected into the project instead of going to another management firm.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Councillor Stacey?
Thank you. I'm very pleased to see that there doesn't appear to be a crowd of angry general contractors here complaining. I don't have a stack of letters saying we got pushed out of an opportunity to bid, but I will just frame the question. We discovered in the course of our work that there's an enormous opportunity to do this smarter with a single general contractor or construction management program by general contractor. And we're still going to have a very robust program involving co-bid subcontractors among the contractors. And Lise Crutcher-Lewis has been doing a good job so far in that area, a very good job. So there's all kinds of advantages to Metro. Should we be thinking about the lack of an opportunity for a second co-bid, and what should we have done about that or anything like that? If you could just speak to that, I'm happy with this arrangement. I think it's great. It's a very smart adaptation to the circumstances we find ourselves in. Should we have thought about it in advance and come up with a different bidding process when Lise Crutcher was selected? Just address that vague question, if you could.
Well, I'll start with that. Yeah, we talked about that. You know, why didn't we think of this earlier, months ago? And, you know, frankly, when we got into the scheduling and the design of Polar Passage, that's taken us a little bit longer than we originally scheduled, which has moved it into the primate design schedule. So now we've got these schedules overlapping, and then looking at what remaining funds we have and cost escalation in the region, it's really pushing us to look for innovative solutions to reduce our costs. So that's been the driver to date. Do you have anything to add?
I do. We actually, in part of the discussion on this, reached out to a couple of general contractors that I thought would be the most likely to compete on this, and they said, you know, basically, they're really busy. That's fine, Jim. We, you know, and we understand that, you know, it's in the best benefit of the zoo. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Councilor Craddock?
Thank you. I, of course, am very supportive of this and really appreciate you guys putting all the work and effort detail into this to bring this to us to be able to combine these last three projects. This is a milestone.
Mm-hmm.
When I first was elected to the Metro Council, we were just beginning the discussion about the bond had just been passed and the how are we going to go about this giant project that we knew would take many years, very complex. And so congratulations. This is really something that we're in the home stretch here. And not only is this efficient, but of course it's a good use to manage our funds, the remaining funds that we have left. But I think in particular it's really a benefit, an opportunity for the public, those people that visit the Oregon Zoo, and we recognize that construction has been disruptive for the visitors. And so we'll be one step closer to allowing the Oregon Zoo to be fully open again to everybody, or to all the venues be open, or all the habitat be open to everybody. And so it's really something to be proud of today. It's really, I think, a significant day. So thank you for all the work that you've put into this and making sure that we're using the funds that the voters approve efficiently, effectively, and then be able to get the zoo back in full operation so everybody can enjoy all the habitats.
Well, with that, we will have the public hearing now. So I'd like to open the public hearing. I don't have any blue cards, but is there anyone here who would like to speak on this resolution? No? Well, seeing that, no one coming forward, I'll close the public hearing. And I should ask for a motion first.
Move approval.
Second.
Thank you. And before calling on the roll call, I'd like to add in my comments. I just want to thank the Citizen Oversight Committee for all of the work that they put into reviewing all these bond projects and working with our team. They do a really comprehensive and thorough process to really get the maximum benefit out of these public dollars and to do so in a very effective manner. In the presentation, there were multiple references to cost escalation. And I just, for the benefit of our audience, want to mention that that is because there's a lot of competition. The economy is going strong, and there's a lot of competition for skilled labor. And we're having to pay that price. And I want to thank the team in advance. You do a great job, as Jim, Mr. Mitchell, gave us an example of reaching out to contractors and subcontractors. I want to thank you in advance for your outreach, because I know you're going to keep doing it and engaging our community. That's really wonderful results for our community. And also, I remember from the Elephant Lands implementation, the contractors, the workers who were there on site doing the work, really seemed to have fun working on the project. You know, dealing with concrete in one of these animal projects is a heck of a lot more fun than it is to build a pedestal for another highway bridge. That's meaningful too, but it's a slightly different element. So I look forward to not only the results of these projects being built, but that through the process that there will be a lot of fun for those involved with the construction. So with that, are there any other comments? All right, Ms. Papstorf, roll call, please.
Excuse me.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Chase?
Aye.
Deputy Council President Harrington?
Yes. And with that, the vote is 5-0, and I need to gavel out the Metro Contract Review Board. We're now adjourned, and gavel back into the meeting of the Metro Council. Gavel, gavel, gavel. And just so that I don't make a mistake, I want to mention that we received up at our dais a hard copy of some citizen communication. No one came to us in person to speak to us, and I know that it will officially be put into the record, but just in case someone is checking through the recording and the video broadcast of this, I want to mention that we have received a packet of information from Ms. Natalie Richards of Vancouver, Washington, with a petition asking for our assistance for an HOV lane on I-5 southbound. So we have that material, and it is being included into the record. With that, I'd like to turn it over to our Chief Operating Officer, Ms. Bennett. What do you have for us?
Heads up and one piece of light and delightful news, because I think that we all deserve a little light and delightful news now that the sun's come out and before that big storm that's coming this weekend comes. A little wind, some more rain. We should be used to it by now. First, I want to make sure that you all saw the coverage about the new asbestos requirements that we've imposed. I think you might remember, because I think Paul Simons emailed all of you, that on April 1st, we have some higher-level requirements for test results for asbestos for construction materials that come to transfer stations. The number of materials has increased. And we're doing this first to protect the public, because exposure to asbestos is not safe for anyone at any level, but also to make sure we comply with Department of Environmental Quality regulations around asbestos. We've been doing a lot of outreach, particularly to folks who do construction and demolition work, also to haulers and other folks who might come in contact with new materials. But last week, KGW interviewed Matt Tracy at Metro Central, and you could have seen Matt Tracy on TV. And then both Matt Tracy and Ken Ray were guests on Around the House with Handyman Bob and Eric G. on KXL on the radio last weekend. I will send you a copy of those links. I think they're also in the Monday email that I send around, but I didn't actually hit send on Monday because I wasn't here. Some really talented people who can get into my email account did that for me. Second, I wanted to make sure that you knew about the event that the City of Portland, Portland Parks and Recreation, is putting on this Saturday related to the Washington Parks Master Plan. They're going to be having an event. They're calling Party in the Park at the World Forestry Center on Saturday from 10 to 2 or 10 to 3. A couple of formal presentations, and I know Councillor Craddock is planning to attend. I guess your attention because they're doing an update of the master plan for the park, but also because as one of the major cultural institutions in the park, Don Moore of the Oregon Zoo co-signed a letter with the other major cultural institutions expressing some issues they'd like to make sure get addressed as part of the park's master plan and some concern about some of the background materials and whether they adequately reflect the visitation at the cultural institutions and how visitors from those who are going to the cultural institutions arrive at the park. I will also email you a copy of said letter. It went out last Tuesday, March 28th, and I think I was on spring vacation, and I hope many of you were not in the office that day as well. And they're also requesting some specific folks who operate the cultural institutions be reflected on the project steering committee, which I don't believe they are right now. And then the light note. Just so you know, the Oregon zookeepers invited the public to weigh in on the names of the new river otter pups, who apparently are about 3 pounds each and have just finally opened their eyes. We got 10,500 votes. And the pups will be known. I think you all know that we name our river otter pups around Northwest Rivers as Nahalem, the girl, who will be called Nellie for short, and Nestucca, or Tucker. So next time you drive to the coast and you go across the Nestucca or the Nahalem, you can think of our cute little... Yeah, there you go. So it's like the cutest thing that's happened to me all day. So I thought you'd like to know.
Oh, glad you've had a bright spot in your day. And now it's time for council communications. Anyone? Councillor Collette.
Thank you. I wanted to report on some sad news in the region. Last week, a very dear personal friend, but also a friend of the region, passed away, Lynn Sharp. Some of you may not know her, but you all know her work, because Lynn was one of the first people to map all the green spaces in the region. And we used to joke about that she had this accumulation of black and white photographs that she taped together. Mike Houck still has this map. All of those wonderful saved spaces in the region are because of Lynn's map. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, it is a tremendous loss. She's given us a lot in the region. So, and it's been really nice to see through social media and Facebook the recognition from so many in the region of how valuable her contribution was and how well thought of she was. So.
What was funny was until recently, I didn't know any of her background around Metro. I was just one of her buddies who, you know, would get together and cook and have fun parties. But when we started talking about her being sick, people started to come out and say, wow, all of this is because Lynn was doing that mapping early on. So the whole region really owes her a great deal. So thank you.
Well, thank you for making sure we're all aware of that. Councillor Craddock.
Thank you. A couple things. Last Friday, the Levy Ready Columbia group met, and this was the executive committee. And they're at a stage, this is a project that's already been 3 years old, it's been going for 3 years. I just recently got involved the last 6 months or so. But we are now at a point where some decisions need to be made. And one of those is, how do we engage the railroad? Because one section of the levee that is along the Columbia River that goes from, the levee section that we're looking at is from Troutdale all the way to Sylvie Island. The levee actually extends all the way to St. Helens, but that is being reviewed by the drainage district that is on Sylvie's Island. So as we move forward, a part of the levee that will probably need some attention is the section where the railroad sits on top of the levee how we go about that. Engaging the railroad is the challenging part of this, and so beginning to think about how we might go about doing that. In addition, the project, to be in good standing with the Corps of Engineers, this project is like a New Starts project that we get funding for through our transportation programs. And Congress approves the Corps of Engineers projects. And so how do we get the Corps' attention and request that this project be sent to Congress and be approved? And so that's the next step. And so we're working with our congressional delegates to help us with that. And getting their staff more engaged in the discussion. And then the third thing that will need to be addressed at some point is the governance structure. Right now, this section of the levee is governed by four different levee districts or drainage districts. And how do you go, what would be the best governance structure for the future? And looking at how we monitor these levees, and if there is a breach, who has that responsibility and who can fund it? So those are the three major decisions that are going to need to be, I guess maybe four in there, that we need to consider for the future. Jules Bailey continues to lead the discussion. He was, of course, former Multnomah County Commissioner, has nicely stayed involved. It was brought to my attention that the section of this levee where the Columbia Corridor, which is, of course, is an industrial area, basically a sanctuary for industry, is about 10% of the jobs in Multnomah County are in this area. It's a big piece of Multnomah County's property tax base. And so there's a very important project for the county. And so we're working with the county to get them more involved and interested in participating in this discussion. So just a step in the process. We'll continue. Andy Cattugno continues to stay involved. Really always glad to see him and his expertise. And so I really appreciate that he's been willing in retirement to continue working on this project. And then Tuesday this week was the monthly Southwest Washington Regional Transportation Council meeting. And I think the major point I want to point out is Jeff Hamm, who's the general manager of C-TRAN, It will be retiring in June. He sits on the Southwest Washington Regional Transportation Council board and really want to make sure that he's recognized for all that he's contributed to transit in the Vancouver area. And, of course, C-Tram buses come into the Portland area. And he has two signature projects that he's leaving in his retirement. One of them is the Vine, the first bus rapid transit project that was built in the Portland metro region. And the second one is this bus on the shoulder. So I'm going to be asking JPAC to Craig Dirksen and the counselors that are involved with JPAC to see if we can get these pointed out or have a presentation about it at the next Metro or JPAC meeting and talk about the significance of these projects. Particularly the bus on the shoulder work is only right now a feasibility study is being done. They're only going to be running the buses on the shoulder in Washington, but ODOT is slowly getting more involved and interested, and ODOT's now considering to allow the buses run on the shoulder on the I-205 bridge. But how do we continue to move this project even further, looking at I-5 maybe possibly, looking at I-84. I know there's some right-of-way issues on those roads, but how do we make sure and see that there's space for the buses to use that have their own right-of-way? And one of those is returning HOV lanes to I-5, and this letter today I think is very appropriate because this could be of significance. If HOV lanes were returned to I-5 in both directions, that makes a huge difference on allowing C-Tran to move back and forth and allow people to use the bus. So I would like to have, I'm going to ask that these projects, we bring some attention to these projects at the next JPAC meeting. And then today, the Oregon Zoo Foundation met. And this is the last day that Mark Loomis he's been sitting in as the interim executive director. Julie Fitzgerald is officially will be on board at the next meeting. And so thank Mark. He's really done an amazing job and stepping in and making sure that everything moves smoothly until a new executive director could be hired. Today, in fact, the board of directors approved some support, financial support for the Oregon Zoo. I think Martha in the near future will be reviewing some of that with us. But I think one project that's in particular really interesting is the giraffe feeding platform where the public will be able to feed the giraffe. There's no concern about health or safety issues. The giraffes are they don't have any teeth in the front, can't bite anybody, and there's no concern about any kind of disease transmission. But what's really fascinating is that, people have to always ask these curiosity questions. Well, how much can you feed a giraffe in one day? And it would be lettuce, romaine lettuce. And they said, well, they can go up to about 50 heads of romaine lettuce a day. So I had to stop and figure out the calories. It's about 13,000 calories a day.
Just lettuce?
Just lettuce.
That's a lot of water in there, too.
50 heads. That's
without the blue cheese dressing?
And the purpose of this is, first of all, it's enjoyable to feed the giraffes. They're such nice animals. But it's really to bring a focus to the conservation of giraffes. Actually, giraffes now we're really starting to pay more attention to giraffes. I think there's like 97,000 giraffes left in Africa. And there's like 350,000 elephants, so I know we have a lot of worries about elephants, but giraffes in many ways are much more, there's much more concern. The giraffes don't have the poaching problems that we have with elephants, but it's the human interaction. Where urbanization is occurring, their habitat is shrinking, and they get involved, they get hit by cars, they get involved with electrical power lines. It's really... it's sad. Yeah. So anyway, so Mark always in his going away, he is a tile maker. He used to do this when he was working at Nike. And so he gave us each of a tile of the Oregon Zoo's logo. Nice. And I think you probably know that this is Packy. So this is really fitting.
Yes.
And so he gave each of the Oregon Zoo Foundation board members a tile today.
Wonderful.
So he was going away, and he gave everyone else a party gift.
He'll stay on the board. He's still there. He's not leaving, but he's really done a good job. So a point that I, just to kind of point out what he's done and what the Oregon Zoo staff have done, They had a 50% turnover from January 2016 to January 2017. So they've really have stepped up. They're the group that's been there and really and have kept everything moving right on, right, as it should. So really
that's
appreciate
foundation staff.
The foundation staff, yeah. Yes. Yeah, excuse me. Not Oregon Zoo staff, yeah.
Challenging.
Great. Thank you, Councillor Craddock. Councillor Chase.
Well, as you will recall, I'm the liaison for the MERC Commission, which oversees the and advises us on the Convention Center, Expo, and Portland 5. And all of those facilities had a really great February after a rough winter where the weather was challenging for business. So it was really nice to hear that February was a gangbuster month. They heard a presentation on the DEI and the DEI plan and coming to, which will be coming to council with their input. And then they got a presentation at the zoo and we had the meeting at the Zoo Education Center. So that was nice for them to see that. Also attended on Monday, Living Coley had an event to celebrate milestones and resources for the Living Coley Park, and moving along, Governor Brown came and spoke and said some very nice words, and as well as Portland City Commissioners. And the North Portland Tool Library is a project that was funded by the North Portland Enhancement Committee funding, and is a really a fantastic resource that is really mostly volunteer run, and we supported some more space for them to store their tools, and they had a nice celebration and really did went over the top thanking Metro and us for our support.
Great. That I've made reference in the Forest Grove Community Enhancement Fund Committee. There was discussion about a tool library, and I mentioned the North Portland Tool Library. So we'll be picking up on our 2017 meetings here starting next week or the week after. And
It's really cool because it not only, you know, instead of I'm a member, and so I don't have to spend $227 on a tool. I can just go deal with shopping. I can just go borrow it and then bring it back. And there's a community there, and there's folks there, and they're really engaging, and there are a lot of volunteers. And so you can save a lot of resources, do your own projects, get advice and help, and, you know, engage with other folks. And it's a nice community asset that's not a big, expensive thing to do in a community.
Yeah, that Cully Park is amazing. Boy, what a transformation. Mm-hmm. Right? Former landfill.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty terrific. Anything else from anyone?
Just one quick. Councillor Chase reminded me that earlier this week I attended Portland 5's performance of Black Violin, which was amazing, absolutely fabulous. It was school day, so all the, or I don't know about all, but a lot of Title I schools were there in the audience. Luckily, we were sort of off in a corner and weren't embedded in the roar of childhood exuberance, because the audience they seemed to know every song, every lyric. They were all singing along. People, everybody, even up us in the balcony, were all dancing in place. And then after we had lunch with Kev Marcus and Will Baptiste, the two Black violin musicians, a local judge and a local physician whose names I can't remember, but they led a conversation with a number of the students about, you know, working outside the box, don't be stopped by opposition, do what you want to do, live the life you want to live, and it was really inspiring. Nice. It was really great.
I heard there were even some tears.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people
really emotionally.
I don't know how many of you were at the Hands Up event earlier, but the woman who did a poetry reading, who's a student of, I think, Roosevelt High School, did another poetry piece there as well at the lunch, and it was, again, really moving. So it was a great opportunity, great way to start the week. It was pretty amazing to be that energized in a just, you know, it really felt like I posted on Facebook. It felt like a million school kids. It was just very well worth attending. I wanted to really thank Robin Williams and the folks at Portland 5 for reaching out to the schools. I know this is what they do, but I talked to Robin and she said this is the most fun she's ever had. This work on diversity and cultural inclusion and getting involved with the schools is just the most fun she's had in her job. So I'm glad we're making her happy.
Great.
Yeah, certainly.
I just want to say thank you to Councilor Harrington. I think you got the discussion going or the idea started, the tour of Roosevelt landfill. Last week. You know, who would ever think that a tour of a landfill is something that it would be very interesting, but it was actually fascinating. And I, of course, had the opportunity to tour the Columbia Ridge landfill, you know, years before, and it was really nice to be able to look at both of them. Roosevelt sits just across the Columbia River in Washington from the in Arlington. And it was really fascinating to see that all they've done. This is they have an intermodal facility where most of their garbage comes in by train. They get two trains a day. The garbage comes from as far away as Alaska, Washington, Seattle area, Spokane, Idaho. I always enjoy these little extra pieces of information. Alaska doesn't have a lot of landfills because of the temperature. It's cold. You can't bury garbage there because it's frozen. So most of their garbage leaves the state to be buried somewhere else. 100% of the methane that's collected off the landfill is converted to electricity. The PUD is involved, the Clickett County's PUD, and that's returned to the grid. They monitor that 24/7. I don't know why I would have thought they didn't have to do that, but they do. I mean, obviously they have to because they need to keep a steady stream of electricity going to the grid. You know, you look at you really don't see a landfill. It's just one cell is open at a time, and the rest just looks like pasture land. And so I enjoyed the falconer that was there, the full-time falconer that keeps the other birds away, and of course mice. And I don't know if you want to add to this, Councilor Harrington, but it was very interesting.
Just a little bit, yeah. It was really a fun field trip. You know, it was ironic. You know, how did you spend your spring break? I went on a landfill tour. But it was fascinating. They have much to be proud of. You were mentioning it doesn't look like a landfill because of the 12,000 acre footprint. They can only go as high as a highest nearby point. And so they're essentially filling in space between the different canyons and using big heavy machinery to compact things down. They have a very extensive leachate facility as well, where the leachate is collected and then reintroduced into the landfill to continue the process of decomposition. A lot of piping. I don't think I've ever seen so many heads for the methane gas tapping. It just, in one eye view, there were just lots of them. as Councillor Craddock mentioned, one of the Klickitat County commissioners joined us as well. And it was great to hear from him the history of how his predecessors were forward-looking in putting all of this together, and then he and his colleagues in investments moving forward. So it was really a very fascinating day, and we very much appreciate that Republic Services was willing to put that tour together, not only for counselor benefit, but also for staff. Our Director of Property and Environmental Services, Paul Slyman, made sure to take advantage of the opportunity. We had a vast array of staff members who joined us. So it was really a great time together. So that was it for me on the landfill. Did you have anything more you wanted to mention? I just wanted to mention one other thing based upon the information you were sharing with us about the Columbia River Levee and the Levee Ready project. Just yesterday afternoon,
Mr. Sliman and I participated in a pre-trip meeting for the upcoming Japan Best Practices trip. He and I will be going along with over 48 other people, big group, but there are two tracks to this trip. Those of us who are focusing on earthquake horror, really, and resiliency, and then urban planning. And the reason I bring up that horror is a PGE, Portland General Electric team, had just been there 2 weeks ago, and they learned a lot. They met with three different electric companies and different types of facilities, and they showed us snippets from a video that at one of the visitor centers they show, and that video is 7 minutes long. What we saw was just clippings for a 1.5 minutes. And I reminded myself twice during that video that this is real, this is not a movie. And it was so, the devastation was so startling. But what made me think of it from the Levy Project is that they also learned a lot about piling. And they had one of the members of their trip became Mr. Piling because he was asking a lot of questions about how they engineered the different pilings there and recovered land and helped, I can't remember the right word now, strengthen or harden the soil, which may be something that might benefit the levee. Now, we'd probably have to get tons of federal permission for that sort of thing. But there are practices and techniques. Just in the pre-trip meeting, we learned a lot about how their power system has changed, and they have, you know, the smart homes of the future that we learned about through the Jetsons, right? How they have electric cars that hook up to a power cell unit that the car can charge that or be charged by it. Then a smart home that has solar. They said solar is just everywhere there now. So it's nice to know that a lot of these tools and techniques that we've been talking about for decades Japan is transformed in many of these sites, and there's still a tremendous amount of devastation that they're working through. We will have a wrap-up from the trip, as you know, from past best practices, but I think there's a lot to be learned, so stay tuned.
So when is that trip?
April 20th through the 28th. Oh, yeah, cool. It's coming right up.
Great.
Yep.
Have fun.
Hope so. Yeah. A few things going on in the world. So anything else for today? No? Well, with that, we will adjourn the Metro Council meeting. And the next regular council meeting is scheduled for next Thursday, April 13th at 2 p.m. here at the Metro Regional Center Council Chamber. Thank you.